Like, if you don't need it, then don't measure it, because it just opens the door for bias to creep in.
So my guest for today's episode is Marcia. She's been in a couple of podcasts before. Super happy to have her again. And today we are going to talk about the Barnum effect, which was, to be fair, a new bias for me. Never heard of it before. Until the moment that I was having a conversation with Marcia about personality tests and how they're oftentimes so generic or so vague in the way they describe your personality, that there's always something there that you can identify yourself with. It's also the reason, by the way, why personality questionnaires and horoscopes are sometimes mentioned in the same sentence. So what we are going to discuss today is, what is the Barnum effect? What is its impact, in particular on personality tests, because that's where it's most impactful? And how can we prevent assessments from suffering from the Barnum effect in order to make sure that the results are always accurate and detailed? So I hope you will enjoy this episode today. It's good to have you back, Marcia.
It's good to be back.
Is this the second one or the third one that we are recording now?
I think we did a podcast and a webinar. I think the other one must have been a webinar. Or maybe we did two webinars. I don't really remember. I really like being here. That shows, I think.
Well, I will invite you over again. No worries.
Thank you.
Hey, for the people who did not listen to your previous one, which was about in-group and similarity bias, right? So
yes,
definitely a recommended one to listen to. But for the people who don't know yet, could you quickly introduce yourself?
Sure. Yeah. My name is Marcia Goddard. I'm a neuroscientist specialized in brain behavior relationships on the work floor. So I deal a lot with team dynamics, group behavior, and obviously diversity and inclusion is a large part of my work right now. But I also focus on well-being and high performance culture, all the things related to people and work floor.
Wow. That was a very on point summary.
Thank you. Thank you. I've practiced.
Cool. Hey, we were, of course, discussing a couple of weeks ago, like, what next bias are we going to tackle in the podcast? Because we are constantly looking, of course, to unpack different biases. And I must admit that, so we are going to discuss the Barnum effect. I will ask you, of course, in a bit to explain that. But I must admit that I think we discussed it like 3 weeks ago. It was the first time for me that I heard about it. It's quite an obvious one, but it's also quite an unknown one. Do you agree with that?
I do. Yeah. The only reason I dove into that, like the only reason it was top of mind for me, I was a little bit primed because I had looked into why people believe in horoscopes a while ago. And that's because of the Barnum effect. So it came up for me then. And as we were talking, I was like, oh, this also kind of applies to how some people go through assessment reports. So it's one of the lesser known biases. But that doesn't make it any less important. It's one that can have a really big impact on how people perceive assessments and just information about people's personalities in general.
Yeah, and in a world where more and more companies are using assessments, I think it's getting even more important that we're aware of it.
Yeah.
Well, brings me to the next point. Could you briefly introduce the Barnum effect?
I will try to be brief, yes.
Well, we have around 20 minutes in total.
Okay. So I will try to keep it to 15 tops. No, I'm kidding. So the Barnum effect is a kind of bias that happens when people think that what they read in a personality description is specifically applicable to them more than to other people. But in reality, a lot of times descriptions are then made up of really incredibly general statements that could apply to anyone. But because we want to believe it, it actually combines with a different bias, confirmation bias, which I think you all did a podcast on as well. And we completely overlook, subconsciously, we overlook the fact that the statements are so general. And this is actually an effect that you can see in a lot of the traditional assessments that a lot of the companies that I've worked with in the past actually like. So MBTI, DISC, they're all fun to do and they're all great conversation starters, but scientifically they're rather meaningless because the statements are so general and not really specific to that person.
Why do you think that? Because, well, I agree. I think, I didn't do a lot of personality tests in the past, but I checked it out, of course, as some material to compare equality with.
Mm-hmm.
So I agree that it's in general quite vague and that for me, it's indeed some sort of horoscope. But I know that I'm by default biased because I don't like traditional tests. But mm-hmm. Why do you think that those tests are built this way, or at least the interpretations, because it happens with basically every personality test out there. So there must be a reason why everything is phrased so vague in general.
I think because then it applies to more people. So just from a business model perspective, I think it's smarter because then more people can use the personality assessments. But just to be more optimistic about the state of the world, I don't think this is necessarily on purpose. I think that a lot of personality tests aren't designed to be assessments. They're not designed to use for selection. They're designed to use, for example, if you have like a team building exercise with your team and you want to know a little bit more about each other, then definitely use the DISC, because you'll find out, oh, I'm red, or I'm yellow, I'm green. You know, it's fun. It's a fun way to get to know each other. And it's a fun way to sort of start a conversation about the dynamics within your team, because I'm not saying that there's no truth to them at all. In that sense, they are different from horoscopes because they're slightly more slightly more predictive of who people are, but only in the extremes. So the nuances of people's personalities isn't captured by these assessments. And I do feel, or I hope, that the people who developed them actually didn't mean for them to be used this way, but it was the best that was available at the time. So people started using it. And then, you know, when people see that there's a market for something, then they'll start creating more of it. So I think might have just, similar to IQ tests, it might have just happened by accident that they started using it for selection purposes.
Yeah. But although, so I agree, I think tests like MBTI even make statements on their website, right? Like, please don't use it for selection purposes, but for development purposes. But in a development setting, the Barnum effect is also not really a positive thing, right? Because, yeah, eventually you also end up in a situation where you think, hey, this applies to me and it's accurate, while it might be different.
Yeah, but I do think in that case, the consequences are just less severe. When you decide on someone's career based on this test, I think that's worse than when you're just having a conversation with your team. And I think if you have a good facilitator, someone who understands what these tests are like and is able to put it into perspective and bring a little bit of nuance into the conversation, then I do see its value. But you're absolutely correct that it's important to be aware of the Barnum effect, and it's important to just take a step back. And that's why those conversations are so important. Usually when you have those development settings, people will say, I don't really recognize this in you. Hopefully that's something that will come up during the conversations that you have based on the results. But like I said, it depends on who's facilitating it, what type of session you're doing. Definitely don't be deterministic about it. Definitely don't think, oh, I'm red, and then start using that as an excuse to just to be really rude to people, because you're red and red people are, you know, rude. And I'm not rude, I'm just to the point, or I'm just honest. That's me because I'm just red. Like that's I've seen that happening actually. In organizations where people would say, they would be in a fight with each other and they'd be like, yeah, I'm just red. That's just how I do things. That's not the right way to use it. But it is the right way to have to think about who you are and how you respond to things. Then I think I don't really see that much of an issue with it.
Do you think it also has something to do with, so this is a bit off topic, by the way, but so I'll try to keep it short. but we, of course, chose to build behavioral assessments and not personality assessments.
Yeah,
I think it might also have something to do with the fact that, like, I think behavior is something that you can measure a bit more. Yeah, well, you can measure it easily because you just look literally at someone's behavior in a setting. And of course, a personality test is just like, based on your answers, we're going to try to draw a conclusion of quite a big thing.
Yeah.
And then we use that to predict how you are going to probably behave in the workplace.
Yeah.
So do you think that it also could have something to do with that, that it's just so much more difficult to really capture personality?
Absolutely.
And therefore we phrase it maybe a bit more.
Yeah. I mean, at some point you have to say, yes, it's this, or no, it's not this. And that's really difficult with personality, because we also know from research that even though, yes, your personality develops and it doesn't change a whole lot when you're an adult, still the nuances of your personality can change depending on the context. You can, as an introvert, learn to be a little bit more extroverted. You will see that in behavior, which makes it interesting to measure behavior. But it's really difficult to measure. Well, I think the big six, the Big Six personality test. I think that's the best personality test that we have, the best framework that we have for measuring personality. But it's not holy. Sometimes it's seen as holy. And we know that the relationship between personality, even the Big Six, and workflow behavior isn't as strong as people would like it to be. Because again, the context can change, you know, can change your how you view things. And it's not tangible. Like, you can sit and you can have a list of behaviors and you can just basically do check. You have that, check, you have that. So you could see it. And with personality, it's always going to be a guess. So you have this statement about, you know, what type of behavior you would demonstrate. And then people have to make assumptions about what that means for your personality. But that, I mean, that brings bias into the whole thing to begin with, because it's a statement. And your answer is going to depend on how you interpret that statement. Do you interpret it, for one, from your personal perspective or your work perspective? Because usually those are two different things. And also, are there maybe cultural sensitivities and certain words that are used? So there is a whole lot of room for error when you just do those standard personality assessments. And I think that makes it tricky, because personality is, in essence, something that we cannot really see. It's something that we can only assume based on the data that we have available, but collecting that data is quite difficult.
Yeah. Yeah. And that makes it maybe also more, well, I think we are quite specific in our interpretations of our assessments, but I think we do make disclaimers, of course, because I think you can never be 100% sure with anything, but we are, I would say, quite specific still with our interpretation, but I think it's also because we can literally, you can see that the things we are saying, like you, and of course it could still be that an assessment is wrong. Of course, not trying to say that our assessment is the holy grail here, but if you say, hey, they're likely to show behavior X, then you could just see if that happens in the workplace. And that's of course different with personality.
Yeah, exactly. And I think what you're touching upon here is the difficulty that a lot of assessments out there make these grand statements about what somebody's complete personality is like based on that one test. And I know that your assessment is quite specific, and that that's kind of difficult to accept for hiring managers, because they'll want like the whole personality description based on 20 minutes of testing, which is just not really realistic. Even if you just look at that from a conceptual point of view, people are too complex to be caught in a 20-minute assessment or even a 45-minute assessment. So it is difficult to start with. So then I think it's better to do many smaller tests to give you input on, okay, what's this specific skill? What's this specific skill? And be a little bit modest in, as you say, the interpretation that you give to it, because it is nuanced and people are nuanced. So it will never be the holy grail, but I think approaching it more from a brain behavior perspective is more useful than saying, oh, you're going to answer 250 questions and then we'll know everything about you.
I had on my my notes to ask you the question, how can you prevent the Barnum effect, or at least minimize it? But I feel like we touched upon that a little bit now.
Yeah. We touched upon it a little bit there. Yeah, it's to be more specific, and specifically for hiring managers, also to accept that you need to be really intentional about what you want to know. If you know in advance what it is that you want to measure, then it doesn't really matter that you don't get the whole picture, because do you really need to know everything about a single person before you hire them? No, you need to know if they're able to do the job, right? So figure out what it is, what behaviors and skills you need for the job, and then measure those. I think that will bring you much more than trying to say, oh, we're going to do a complete 360 on someone, ask them 1,000 questions, and then find out that it wasn't predictive of who they were on the work floor because it wasn't necessary.
Yeah, and I think it's even dangerous to do that, because I think if you... So we also always advise our customers, like, if something is irrelevant to a job or a team or whatever, just do not enable the assessment, because if the result is maybe not what you were hoping for, but it has nothing to do with how you're going to perform in a job, then you could even still end up in a situation where someone is being rejected because of that.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I mean, like, if you don't need it, then don't measure it, because it just opens the door for bias to creep in and to influence your decisions in a way that's unfair to the candidate.
Yeah. Hey, something that we spoke about just before we hit the record button was also how the framing effect is linked into this bias. Could you explain what the framing effect is?
Yeah. So the framing effect happens when people let their decisions and their opinions be influenced by the way that information is presented to them. And I think the best way to describe it is to use an example. If you're 600 people's lives are in your hands, what do you want to do? Do you want to kill 200 people, or do you want to save 400 people? What's your first instinct? What's the first thing you say you want to do? Kill 200 or save 400?
Save 400?
Yeah, exactly. It's the same thing, though, because there are 600 people. So if you kill 200, yeah, we'll still have saved 400.
Yeah, I was thinking about when I was answering, like, oh, this is exactly the same. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, it's exactly the same, and yet people will always, when I do this, I sometimes do these keynotes and I'll do a little poll question and I'll ask this. Even though everyone knows it's the same, they will still choose, the majority of them will still, I want to save 400 people because it's framed more positively, even if it doesn't make any difference. So the same happens in assessments. For example, if you use low and high, people are going to frame that as good versus bad. And in some cases, that's absolutely correct. Like some, especially cognitive skills, are just always good to have. And having scoring lower on a skill is actually worse, problem solving. If you score low on problem solving, that's almost never a good thing. I cannot think of a situation in which that would help you.
Yeah.
But for a lot of skills, especially when you move from cognition to behavioral skills, sometimes there's no such thing as high or low. There's only different. So the example that I gave you is, yes, it's definitely good to be very flexible, so to score high on flexibility. But if you score very low on flexibility, then you're very structured and you work well in a very structured environment, which can also be good depending on the type of role that a hiring manager is trying to recruit for. So again, you need to be really intentional about what you need and then also be intentional about framing it as high or low. It would be better to frame it as a spectrum from one behavior to another behavior without putting a specific value on either one. So yeah, it has a big impact on people's perceptions of whether people are good or bad for the job.
Yeah. Well, I even see that with visualizing it. We discussed it, of course, a couple of weeks ago that we, so I'm going to visualize that now for everyone who's listening. We have assessment scores in buckets ranging from 1 to 5 based on percentile scores, and it's in a normal distribution chart. So, and with behavior, of course, there's no good or bad. So it's one way or the other. But still, if you we need to always pick one behavior to go on the left side of the spectrum and one behavior to go on the right side of the spectrum.
Yeah.
And for some reason, people always it always sticks to your mind. Like if the more you go to the right, the better it gets.
Yeah.
Well, that's of course not the thing. So I think it's about how you phrase your sentences and explanation or whatever. But even the way you visualize it, I think already has such a big impact. We still didn't find a solution for it, by the way. But
it's a tricky one. And I think there's also like culture influences there, because there are cultures where they read from right to left, isn't it?
Yeah.
I don't know. I haven't studied this, but I can imagine that it might be different there. But the fact remains that people will have an interpretation of any spectrum. Left or right, right or left doesn't really matter, where one side is better than the other. So it's always going to be a challenge. You'll never solve it completely, but it is good to think about it and to also not use like green and red in coloring, like things like that. All those things have an impact on how people view the stuff that's on that report.
Yeah. Yeah. I think what we do try now is some sort of having an equal number of strengths and weaknesses on both sides so that people see, oh yeah, there it goes both ways. But
yeah,
I definitely see that. Hey, so if I would summarize the Barnum effect in, I want to say one sentence, maybe I'm going to go for two. Not the Barnum effect, how we can prevent it. It's basically we need to accept that we can't measure everything about a person. And if we want to move away from the Barnum effect, we just need to accept that we need to be more specific with what we say. Therefore, we are not going to be able to say as much as we might be doing now.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So you'll have less information to go on, which makes it more important to think about the information that you need in order to make your decision. But to counteract the Barnum effect, you want to be less general and more specific.
Love it. And I think we were perfectly in time now. Well, you will probably be back in a couple of months with another buyer.
Happy to be here. Happy to be here again.
I always love the fact that you can just... We were chatting about it, of course, just before we started the recording, that unconscious bias is still such an unknown area for people. And I think a lot of people also find it very complicated. So it's good that you always... Yeah. Somehow you can always very easily simplify something.
Thank you. I'm happy to hear that, because that's kind of what I do all day, trying to simplify like stuff about the brain and apply it to behavior and to the work environment. So I'm happy that I've gotten good at that, because otherwise I wouldn't be able to do my job.
Well, mission accomplished for today.
Thank you.
Hey, thanks so much for being here again. If for the people who are listening, if you have any questions for Marcia or for me, that will probably be for Marcia, then we are, I think, both active on LinkedIn. So always feel free to just reach out, send a connection request, and we will add some interesting resources to the description of the episode. And I hope to see you back on my next episode. And thanks again, Marcia.
You're welcome.